Well.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Listen, maybe it's not something people are so concerned about, but they absolutely should be. The terrorism that exists inside of this nation, and a lot of it has been since Donald Trump was in office. And as the FBI stated earlier, I stated earlier from the article in Newsweek, it's been the last 5 years, and Donald Trump was clearly the president when these things always did exist. The people that we're talking about, the Proud Boys, the Oath Keepers, all of those paramilitary groups that are well-armed, the Posse Comitatus in my time, and all of these groups were always there, heavily armed. You know, that's the part of it, too, that Gary won't talk about. It's all of those groups are heavily armed with military weapons. They train. What are they training for with their military weapons, paramilitary groups? You know, who's asked them? We don't need them as a society to protect the United States government, for heaven's sakes. We've got military, we've got National Guard, we've got law enforcement. None of them have asked for any of the MAGA people or these paramilitary groups to defend the government. Nobody's asked them to do that. So, number one, that's why there's such a major threat to this nation. Because they're a threat to law enforcement, they're a threat to the military, they're a threat to everybody. You know, just because you yourself as a citizen have anointed yourself as someone who's going to be a protector of our government. But come on, man. We spend $850 billion a year on the military to protect our government. Guess what? We don't need you. The government doesn't need you. And what is your purpose? The FBI knows what your purpose is. The CIA knows what your purpose is. You know, I'm a MAGA Republican. I don't like what they did to Donald Trump. Okay. You have a right to say that. And nobody's going to do anything to you. You're not a threat when you say that. Okay. But then when you turn around and arm yourself and start making those kinds of threats, now you are a threat. And so that's what the issue is. Not only are you a threat with that in that manner, but in this manner. Domestic terrorists could take out U.S. power grid and attacks have started. Most people ignore the electrical grid until it stops working. When that happens, the disruption can be total, but most often is a matter of inconvenience. The lights go out. The internet goes down. There's no place to recharge a cell phone. But what if power did not return for days, weeks, or months? And what if such a lengthy blackout engulfed not just the neighborhood or county, but a wide swath of the nation? The consequences, experts say, would be devastating. Many people would have to drink, have no water to drink, no gas for their cars, no heat for their homes. They wouldn't be able to cash paychecks, use a credit card, or call an ambulance. Food, vital medicines, and other essentials would grow scarce because trucks would be unable to refuel. Virtually every aspect of life would come to a halt. Casualties could run into the millions. The possibility of widespread and prolonged outages may seem to many people like the stuff of science fiction, but security experts now believe that the chance of such disaster is higher than it's been ever and rising. Listen to this. In the last 8 months, of 2022, the U.S. electrical grid was physically attacked 107 times, according to the U.S. General Accounting Office. The most in more than a decade. And I can tell you, Gary, it wasn't Antifa that attacked it. They know who it was. And so the FBI has ramped up because they know this threat, this internal threat, and they know who it's from, and they know why. And what I don't understand is, why are they waiting? Why aren't they arresting these people wholesale and locking them up? Why are they waiting until they commit this act of treason? That's what I say. U.S. General Accounting Office said more than a decade. On December 3rd, shootings at two substations in Moore County, North Carolina, plunged more than 40,000 people into darkness. Reports have since emerged of other recent acts of sabotage, including a series of attacks against four sites in Pierce County, Washington, leaving around 14,000 people without power on Christmas Day. Alt-right groups hold the End Domestic Terrorism rally at Tom McCall Waterfront Park in Portland, Oregon, on August 17, 2019. These attacks, authorities believe, are coming from domestic extremists who in recent months have shown a newfound willingness to strike at the transformers and power lines across the nation. So what should be done to people who call themselves Americans, who act in treasonous manners against the United States government? You explain to me why, well, they're good Americans, they are just mad. What the hell are you talking about? Mad about what? And if they're so angry about something, well, they're mad about the way Donald Trump has been treated. If the American people don't understand the depth of where we are headed, and the fact that these people are who they are and are doing what they're doing and planning what they are planning, what the hell are we waiting for? Are we waiting for them to cause major damage where all of us pay a price? Are they waiting for them to, hell, blow up a dam? Is that what it's going to take before somebody says what we need to do to these so-called American citizens? Don't tell me, they're angry Americans. Angry about what? Well, you know, they didn't like how Donald Trump was treated. Oh, so because Donald Trump lost an election and you're angry, and you don't know how to handle, and you don't know how to handle things not going your way, you make threats to all of us in this country. No, there's no way we should understand your anger. You are a criminal, and you need to be handled in that manner. They need to lock you up and throw away the key. You're not a patriot threatening to destroy the grid. You're at war with the country. You're at war with the American people. You're no hero. Let's stop acting like these people are that. They absolutely are not. People who are willing to threaten the very fabric of what this nation is. And we want to somehow ignore that. Kind of just put Dave on quickly. Put Dave on. As we begin to, because we've only got put Dave. Oh, what time is it? Oh, we got the governor on. All right. So listen, we'll come back. I'm sorry, Governor Evers is on the line. Is that right?
Yeah, his it was. Right. I think it was the office. He was
Okay. So do we? Is he on the line now?
Yeah, I have to. I have to call him and check him in real quick again.
Okay, go ahead.
Let me do that real quick.
Well, can you put Dave on in the intro?
Yeah.
All right, go ahead, Dave.
Hey, Earl. To your point, I actually go a step further than you would, besides throwing the key. Because they're threatening, you know, the grid and gazillions of people, I think there should be a federal death penalty for something like that. And the reason being, Earl, you know, why an individual that wants to commit, you know, a heinous crime or something like that, where it would cause, you know, literally this, I mean, you want to talk about society blowing up, that would do it. And all we have to realize is people, if we remember when New York City had some blackouts and there was this, you know, looting and everything else was crazy. People were being shot left and right. If you were to have that out of commission for, like you said, for weeks or months or whatever, there would be severe consequences.
Dave, let me do this. There has to be a severe penalty for that.
I've got
the governor on the line. We're going to take the governor, and you can call back after the break, and we'll continue the conversation. Good morning, Governor Evers. How you doing, sir?
Very good, Earl. How are you today?
I'm doing fine. Congratulations. Haven't had a chance to tell you how happy and excited we are that we get your leadership for another 4 years.
No, thanks so much, Earl. I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to it.
You know, I've been around a little while, and there have been many governors. I've been in the state my entire life, and clearly what you've been able to do in with all the opposition that you face has been great. So thank you again for all of that. What are the plans for the next 4 years, sir?
We've accomplished a lot in the last 4 years, and we are planning to continue to do that with some areas that we did not quite get there. And one of those, obviously, is shared revenue, and that's so important for not just Milwaukee and Milwaukee County, but it's important for the entire state of Wisconsin to make sure that the local communities, the local counties have the resources they need to do the hard work. And Earl, I'll just give you an example. This is not Milwaukee related, but it is. I was in a relatively small city in northern Wisconsin, and this is before the election. And they have a fire department there. They're big enough to have their own fire department. But if they go out on one call, that's all they can do. If another call came at 10 minutes later, no one would be able to respond.
As critically important as this will be fixed.
Yeah, I do think it will be fixed. Obviously, we have the speaker going around the state talking about it, so that's a good thing. I'm not quite sure what's going to come out of that, but at the end of the day, when we have the Republicans, Democrats, and the governor behind something, we should be able to solve it, and I think we will. We will have a proposal that goes in our next budget. It may be modified, but at the end of the day, we anticipate that we will be able to provide more resources. It's critical. I mean, it isn't just Milwaukee. Milwaukee is absolutely part of the issue, but it's all across the state, small towns, big towns. And when you have a governmental agency, an entity working hard to get things accomplished, whether it's public safety, whether it's public health, they need the help of the state to finance that. And so I think there's widespread. There may be difference of opinion on smaller things, but at the end of the day, I believe there will be more money coming to the counties and the cities and in the townships.
Governor Evers, the $6 billion surplus, and clearly the Republicans are pushing against you having authority for the most part on what to do with those resources. What are your thoughts? Because the governor before you, they gave him that authority, and now they want to take it back. What are your thoughts about that?
I think it's wrong-headed. I mean, if you think about, I mean, their main point of controversy for them is the way I spent money during the pandemic. And we did it transparently. Anybody that wants to know how that money was spent, all they have to do to go to one site on our website, and they can figure it out. But we every dollar went out. We did it in consultation with the people that that needed to that had needs, and whether it's small businesses, whether it was our farmers, whether it was. We are trying to help diversity and inclusion in some of our urban areas around housing and other things. All the things had a reason for happening. And you know, think about this, Earl. If you know, we spent a lot of money, but that's the reason we have a $6 billion surplus. But in addition, we had a legislature that was MIA for yes. 300 days. So what were we going to do? Wait until they came in so that we could order vaccine before we order masks? That's just it's ridiculous. So yes, it is something I don't support. It's something, frankly, that. Will end up being a referendum, and I don't have veto power over this, and that's exactly why they're doing what they're doing.
You know, Governor Evers, the private school, the voucher schools, they're demanding that more money goes towards private schools, and you look at what is taking place in public schools across the state. Many of them are not awash in resources the way I'm hearing constantly it being portrayed. Your thoughts on the demands that more money goes into these private schools before we can even talk about anything else?
Yeah, well, that's not the way it should be. That we take care of them first, and then whatever's left over. The fact of the matter is, our public schools, compared to other states in the nation, are funded less than that. And right now, we have public schools on a regular basis every election. Whether it's spring, fall, or in between special elections, they're going to referendum to keep the doors open, and they're successful because the Republicans should understand that most of these are in their areas, and when people go in and say yes, I want good things for our public schools, I'll even raise my own taxes. That should ring a bell for Republicans at least. And that's why we need to provide more resources, because for the 80% that win those referendums, there's 20% that lose them, and that just creates more inequity and inequality. And so we will get more money to our schools. I think there is some momentum around that.
You know, Governor Evers, we don't have a whole lot of time, but can you take one call?
Sure.
All right, let's go to Don. Hey, Don, how you doing? Thank you very much. You have a question to come up for Governor Evers. Make it short.
Sure. Hi, Earl. Hi, Governor. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, terrific. Hey, appreciate the chance. Earl and I spoke yesterday. There was an article published in yesterday's Waukesha Freeman about a proposed resolution in front of our school board to give parents more authority over the curricular developments. And Governor Evers, as our former education czar, you know, would love to hear your feedback on this. Many of us parents are very concerned. We chose public education for our kids so that they could get a broad liberal arts education that also focused on science and technology and was also inclusive. But we have this movement here from the far right.
Oh, okay, Don, we got to let him respond. We're almost out of time. Go ahead, Governor Evers.
A lot of that movement from the far right comes from out of state. It's a national movement. And first of all, the fallacy here is that they're saying that parents don't have the authority or aren't partners in their kids' education. That's just not true. I've been in the classroom. I've been in schools. And parents are co-equal. They're, you know, whether it's different committees, they've been actively involved. This new movement sure seems to me to be, you know, kind of a anti-woke, whatever woke means, and it's going to make it more difficult for kids to leave our schools with a broad-based education if they keep narrowing and narrowing and narrowing. But to me, the fallacy is right from the get-go. Parents are active in school districts now, and to say they have been left behind, I think, is inadequate. And so I have grandkids. I know their parents are active in schools, and they feel that they have the right to make suggestions and work things out with parents and or with teachers and administrators and school boards.
You know, Governor Evers, it's always too short, but I know you're a busy man. I thank you for taking the time out to come on these airways, and the door is always open for you.
All right. Thanks, Earl. We'll make it happen. Thanks.
All right. Congratulations again. Listen, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. Don, hang on. We'll be right back. Show as always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. On the phone, my colleague here at 540 AM WAUK, Mr. Dunn Brown, still on the line. How you doing, Dunn?
I'm great, thanks. How are you, sir?
All right. So you had a couple issues that you thought were should be brought to the light of this community. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I appreciate you including me in the conversation with the governor. I thought, again, as our former education czar, that it was great for him to weigh in. And he hit the nail on the head. There's forces outside the state that are trying to influence our schools. And it's happening nationwide, and it's happening here in Waukesha. We saw it a couple of years ago where the board initially voted to cancel the free school lunch program, which is a federally funded program and was doing great things for lower-income families, lower-income students in our community. Now they're trying to initiate a resolution. I think it's going to be talked about in the school board tonight, maybe even voted on, that they want to give parents more control over the curricular development. And you talk to any educator, like the governors, and that's, you know, parents don't know what's going to be on the state exams. Parents don't know everything. That's why we have trained educators teaching our students, managing our schools, creating programs. And because there's been an effort to create a more inclusive environment for our children and our faculty, that offends people on the right that are offended by, different sexual orientations or whatever that may be, different religious beliefs. And so now they want to cram their values down the rest of our throats to enforce this right-wing agenda. And it goes back to the conversation you were having earlier about it's all part of this MAGA thing where people are being led down a trail and they're offended or they're afraid or they're hateful towards those things they don't understand. And now it's penetrating our school board. And so I think people need to pay attention. They need to check out tonight's meeting, either in person or virtually, you know, through Zoom, show up and give public comment. You know, we need to leave our schools alone and let our teachers do what they do best.
So Don, I would agree with the governor. It's a national phenomenon. It has been going on Republican Party organized efforts to take over school boards several years ago. And basically determine what is being taught, what is going to be allowed to be taught, what is not. And as a parent, former parent, well, I'm still a parent, when my children were in school, we didn't have this where we pushed against what was going on and tried to force the schools to teach what we wanted them to know, what we wanted children to know. And I talked about this a little bit on my show on yesterday. I'm not an educator. And neither are many of the people who have stormed into school boards and caused extreme chaos. And they're going to dictate what happens with the education of our children. It is a negative reality. It should never happen. And yet they're winning in many instances because they're controlling who's on the school board. So what's happening in Waukesha is a microcosm of what is taking place all over this nation. And the fight is, I think, not solely with the people who are going to, you know, on the school board with Waukesha, but a broader fight about what the plans are for these people, as I stated earlier in the show, you know, tribalism and people who have decided that they're going to take things over and it's going to be their way or the highway. That's kind of what it is.
Yeah. And so, Earl, last at the June school board meeting, it was announced that over 80 teachers were vacating their positions, were quitting, were resigning in light of the changing direction of the board leadership, and many of them came and gave public comment. And after all that was done, the first thing one of the board members brought up was, we got to be careful the kind of books we're letting into our school libraries. You know? And so it's like, let's ignore the bigger problem and focus even more on the problem that they're creating. It's very, you know, very disturbing.
Well, you know, everybody's got to fight their own fights, and so this is a fight that can only be fought inside of Waukesha, and it's a broader fight nationally, but on each level, the fights have to be fought internally. Like in Milwaukee, the same thing. That fight, nobody from Waukesha can win that fight for the people in Milwaukee, and nobody from Milwaukee can win that fight for the people of Waukesha.
Here's where I respectfully disagree is that I think there are opportunities to form alliances across communities because I'm a Waukesha South parent. Waukesha South is the most diverse high school in Waukesha. It's the most diverse high school in their athletic conference. The city of Waukesha is the most diverse city in Waukesha County, and people choose to live in Waukesha because of the diversity. They feel it's a better environment for their children to be raised. And, you know, we're under attack, you know, again, from the far right. And I think from a very small segment that's successful in getting people out to vote and scaring people. And so I think if we, you know, we may not do anything in time for tonight's meeting, but I think we raise attention and we inspire other people to talk about what's going on in their school districts, that perhaps we can build something larger, something grassroots that screams for common sense And, you know, and I think it's just like we have to be afraid of those people that are different than us. We have to be more inclusive. The ironic thing, Earl, is that corporate America is actually leading the way in inclusivity because they realize what great business sense it makes. When people are coming to work, not afraid to be themselves, attendance rates at work are higher, insurance rates are low, productivity skyrockets, innovation. These companies are 70-80% more innovative, 2 to 3 times more likely to capture new markets, to exceed sales goals, all these things. And they may not be doing it because their heart's in the right place, but they're doing it because they see the business sense that it makes, the profitability. And why shouldn't schools think the same way? Why isn't the GOP spiking the ball because they're leading the way? The companies that support them are leading the way inclusivity. Why? Because they don't want to alienate the far right, the conservatives that have become such a important voting block to them. And that's what's heartbreaking and disappointing. And that's what we need to shed light on.
Well, Don, truth of the matter is that the Republican Party does not support public schools. They haven't for a long, long time. They are all in it for private schools. And so, you know, you're not going to get the majority of the Republicans to support public schools. They didn't just get to be that way. That's who they are. They're going to continue to push it. As I spoke with the governor about what one of their main agendas is this time around. One of their main agendas is to make sure that there's more money poured into these private schools and at the expense of public schools. So we're not going to get them to look at this from a different perspective.
There's a couple opportunities, Earl. If you remember in the Walker administration, the whole choice thing went through and all these choice schools popped up. And then all the people driving it realized, hey, we need trained professionals to do this. We're in over our heads. Or there were profiteers that went in and made their money and then left the state and left people holding the bag with their kids. And so now they're trying to impose their will on public schools. Like, well, we don't know how to do choice schools, so now we're going to try to force public schools. And the one exception, though, to the rule is that companies support the junior colleges, which are the greatest things ever invented. And the junior colleges pull right from the local high schools. They've got great cooperative programs. And so I think there is an opportunity to engage positive partnerships with our big companies, our mid-sized and small companies, through the junior colleges because, you know, they're very high placement rates from kids going to these schools and getting great educations in the trades and science and technology and in other areas. And so I think maybe we can find common ground with our Republican friends is, you know, hey, here's an opportunity where education works and we're all on the same page. Just some food for thought there.
Well, but you know, Gary, Don. because I live in the city that was the origin of private schools, and because I know the people who created vouchers, and because I've seen the expansion of it across the state, and because I've seen even the national voucher movement that was spurned again by what happened here in this state and starting in the city of Milwaukee, I don't share the belief with you that there's going to somehow be coming to Jesus moment with people who don't believe that public schools are doing the best to educate children and that somehow private schools are going to always do a better job. They never talk about the fact that private schools...
I'll concede that point. There are certainly those people that can't be convinced. I agree.
Well, that private schools can pick and choose who they're going to have in their schools to educate, while public schools are mandated by law to educate everybody. As long as that reality exists, and it does, the battle for private and public schools is going to remain.
Right.
Because at the root of it is money.
Yeah. But, and so that's my response to all these right-wing families, Earl, is that, you know, if homosexuality, all that stuff offends you, if people of different ethnic origins offend you, go start your own private school then. Go, or, you know, if there's a certain, you know, extreme view of Christianity that you have that just doesn't jive with the education your kids are getting in the public school, take them out and put them in a private school. If it's that important to you, pay the extra money. Leave our public education alone. Leave the rest of us that want abroad, that see the value in meeting people with a different point of view, with different perspectives, and learning about different cultures, and learning how to accept people. Leave us alone and go do your, you know, go off to your alternative reality and put your kids in those schools. That's how it used to be.
Let me say this. I had on last week before last, a fellow at Marquette University who deals with these subjects about private and public schools. His name escapes me. But he, as he stated, right, you know, that that horse has already left the barn. And yeah, in that discussion, you're not going to ever stop that truck from moving down the road. Yeah. And the private schools are here to stay. And we've witnessed it in Milwaukee. We're almost 50% of the public schools have lost to private schools.
Sure. Yeah. You're right. It's a different dynamic, I think, in Milwaukee.
Now, we got to go to break. Yeah. Thank you very much for the call,
I got to go back to work. Thanks, Earl. I appreciate it.
We'll talk later.
Talk to you soon. Bye for now.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know, Governor Evers and the fact that, you know, and I said this early on, there appears to be a little more willingness on the part of Robin Voss, who I've reached out to several times to see if we can get him on the air, you know, to somehow be willing to work with the Democratic Party. And I don't know if it was because of the fact that Robin Voss saw that the Republican Party tried to basically take his leadership role away under Donald Trump and others, and that he somehow is willing to push back against all of the horrific things that they had been doing in this state. Again, don't ever forget, as the governor pointed out, 300 days the legislature did not meet. An entire year. They got paid. We paid them. In 300 years in a representative government, 300 days in a representative government, our government did nothing. At a time that is so critically important, we were not active in government. Should have been criminal. And so, you know, if I get a chance to talk to Robin Voss, I got to ask him that. Nobody's asking him that. Well, why did you see fit over a 300-day period, an entire year period, when there was a $6 billion surplus and all sorts of issues, were impacting and affecting the citizens of the state of Wisconsin, you chose for there not to be representation. You chose. Why? Nobody's asking him that. I will, if and when I'm given the opportunity to do that, because he shouldn't just get away with that. It shouldn't be, well, you know, that happened before, and that was then, and this is now. No. You should be made to explain how you can cut off the representation of the citizens of the state that you yourself anointed yourself as emperor and king, and now a year later you choose to come back and do your job. You should never be allowed to get away with that. And the people who had an opportunity to interview him and talk to him should clearly have made that an issue and not let him weasel his way out of that. Having said that, he came back somewhat conciliatory from the standpoint that now he's at least saying that he's willing to have some kind of dialogue. You know, I don't feel as comfortable or confident as the governor, whom I respect tremendously, that somehow Robin Voss is now all of a sudden, and the Republican Party is now all of a sudden going to do the right thing as it relates to, you know, sharing the resources of the state with the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County. I know there are other entities across the state that suffer the exact same thing. But when you talk about the amount of fire departments that have been shut down in the city of Milwaukee, Milwaukee's a large, very large city. We've shut down over the last 5 to 6 years, 7 to 8 fire houses because we can't afford it. And when you look at the amount of people that are in Milwaukee, you can combine almost all these other smaller towns and whatnot and not come up with the sheer numbers that are in Milwaukee County. The dangers that Robin Voss and others plans to do everything within their power to see Milwaukee County crumble are dangerous. That's what they are. And he shouldn't be getting a pass. You know, I agree with the governor. You know, he's in a small town. There's only one firehouse, one. Something's wrong with that. Especially when you're sitting on $6 billion. How did we get to sit on $6 billion? You know how? Because you had not been returning the dollars that had been coming in. Let's go to Bill quickly. Hey, Bill, quickly. I'm sorry. Quickly, Bill.
Thanks, Earl. On Robin Voss, you know, he cost taxpayers a million, maybe millions of dollars by not working. They are supposed to legislate that office is supposed to be open. And if you want to know what path they're going down or what they're beholding to, they want to throw off now this is nationally, on a national level, the ethics committee. They don't want to have ethics. So he's got to be called out on that. And as far as the city, specifically Milwaukee, shared revenue was destroyed by Scott Walker. That's who destroyed all this. Robin Voss was arm in arm with him on all of that. That's why Milwaukee isn't getting the money they need. I'll hang up. Yeah, thanks, Earl, for bringing to light. This man owes us a ton of money.
Hey, Bill, thank you very much for the call, along with Scott Fitzgerald and the rest of the band. Listen, we've got to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Mr. Mike Lappin, Department of Health and Human Services Administrator for Milwaukee County Behavioral Health. We'll be right back.